It's not succinct
that was,
enough.
That was the excellent. That's like agreed on the performance review when you don't want to write anything and you're like, I agree. Which I'm not gonna lie. I do that sometimes. Hi, welcome to the Team Around the Table podcast. I'm Sarah Wiseman, and today I'm going to be talking about transition with Brandy Avery. Hi, Brandy.
Hello, good morning.
How are you this morning?
Doing well, thank you.
Brandy, one of the things that you and I have in common is that we've both spent a lot of time working on transitions, and we're pretty passionate about doing them well and demystifying them. And we want to delve into that today and talk about how we at Cushman & Wakefield approach transition, because I think our approach is unique in the marketplace, and I think that transition can be a really positive and value accretive experience for our clients if we approach it the right way. But before we do that, let's just level set for folks. When we talk about transition in an outsourcing situation, what are we really talking about?
So when you think about transition really is just the process of change. So whether you are managing your own real estate needs or you've decided to outsource that, It's actually just the transition or the transfer to that new provider.
That's great. I think that's important to get out there at the very beginning, because transition is a word that gets used in a lot of different scenarios. But we're talking about a very specific application of that in the outsourcing environment, and it's usually around a new contract or an extension of a contract. And it happens to be something that a lot of clients find really scary and kind of intimidating as a process. And I don't know about you, but I think often that risk and that fear is a little bit misplaced. Transition is something that we in the industry, and particularly here at C&W, we do it all the time. This is a task that we repeat, and we have processes and tools and methodologies that are not just robust, but that have really been stress tested through multiple iterations. And so when I think about transition and transition risk, I really think about what our clients need to be doing, the information they need to be gathering, all of those things that really sit on the client side of the equation as being more risky than the actual work that we perform on behalf of the client, because we're repeating this work all of the time. But our clients aren't doing this all of the time. So let's talk a little bit about risk and the perception of risk in transition.
Thanks, Sarah. Now, I think I love the way you kind of teed that up. I wish clients would actually focus more on some of the risk on their side and then be transparent and communicate what they're concerned about, what they're worried about. We see certain types of risk and we've got plans to mitigate those. So whether the client's worried about disruption to service, whether they're concerned about the talent retention, whether we're going to have scope alignment or misalignment on expectations, resistance to change. Those are the things that we're looking to understand. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to create an approach that supports the mitigation of those risks. So we have great onboarding programs, things that we've created specifically to bring talent over, start to help them understand the culture of the client, the goals and objectives of the contract, and what we actually want to get out of it, right? Because this is all about the outcomes.
That's right.
And less about the tactical setup of the transition.
That's right. And I think one of the challenges we often see, and I've seen this from an account director perspective, is that we focus a lot, as we should do, on training up our team within the scope of the transition, on the contract, on the service delivery model, on the scope and the obligations and the KPIs and all of those things. And that doesn't often happen at such a deep level on the client side with the folks that are interacting with our teams day to day. And I think that's a big area of transition where if we could really get to an expectation alignment with our clients early in the process, we get a much better outcome.
So I've had the pleasure to work on many transitions, as you know, and I think the ones that haven't gone as well are the ones where the client's been hesitant to actually tell the people that they work with what's going on, or to communicate the changes coming, how it's going to impact the employees, what's in it for them, like what's the actual benefit of this change. Change doesn't have to be scary. Change can actually be very positive.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. So, you know, we take an approach of transparency, and we talk about that a lot with our clients when we're structuring delivery models and solutions for their real estate needs. Clients care a lot about transparency from us, and I'm not sure that they always recognize the value of transparency on their side. And it's really important that clients take ownership of that communication, that they own the story, that they own the narrative, and that they bring their people along.
Mm-hmm. And they remember that we're here to help. Yeah. So we have a whole team of change management experts behind the scenes that will help craft those email communications or help put together that strategy on how we're going to launch and talk about it. They definitely need to own it, and they need to identify the stakeholders mm-hmm. and who's going to be impacted, but we can certainly help with that messaging.
100%. We can give you our advice and our counsel and perhaps help you get further down that road on that journey on the client side.
No, and I think that's one of the most important decisions the client makes at the very beginning is what team do you want to work with, mm-hmm. right? Who can you trust and actually partner with? And then once you're in that, commit to that partnership. Mm-hmm. Commit to the concept of change and actually dive in and talk about those very same things. These can be difficult conversations. Yeah. But I think if you've chosen a partner that shares your same values or is really aligned with your goals and objectives, then it's an easy conversation to have.
Yeah.
And now we need to talk about what's not working. What do you wish would work better or could be done better? Mm-hmm. And let's actually create a plan to meet those needs.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. And you mentioned, you know, the team, choosing the team that you're going to work with. We've spent a lot of time looking at how we structure our transition function and what our teams look like. And we really take what I think is kind of a unique approach, which is we really have a one team approach as far as our service delivery partners in the service lines and the transition team. And it's a little bit different than what you and I are used to.
Absolutely. You know, I've worked at different providers and seen them do it different ways, but many times the delivery groups are segmented, right? Or they're siloed or they work independently. And what I love about working here is that all the teams work under the same umbrella and they all report into the same management structure. Everyone's on the same page. We're sharing the same tools, processes, and everybody's really on board. The problems aren't in the specific setup of activities. The problems are in the integration points where things come together, and that's where things can fall through the cracks. So when everybody understands each other's roles and they're actually working to deliver mm-hmm. a seamless experience, then they start to look for those connection points and make sure they've mitigated risk in that area.
Yeah, I think that's a really important nuance to reiterate, that what we're talking about here is the difference between the hard line reporting relationship into the transition function mm-hmm. and the dotted line. And that might seem like a nuance or just a, you know, a detail, but it's a really important detail, because what that means is that all those individuals who are dedicated transition resources are being measured in the same way. And that makes a difference than a situation where your team is bifurcated or broken into even more discrete pieces, and they're not really that hard line connected to each other. It's really an important distinction, I think.
Oh, I think it is. And you know, what it also eliminates is that finger pointing when something does go mm-hmm. wrong, right? Well, it was them. I'm like, guys, this is all us, right? Yeah. We're on the same team and we need to realize that we're all accountable for the experience here. Oftentimes you and I are actually sitting at the table mm-hmm. in a function that sounds very similar. Mm-hmm. Where I'm really focused on the strategic setup of the transition, making sure everything gets set up where it's aligned to the expected outcomes, right? Or the ability to deliver yep. to the contractual obligations. You, on the other hand, are kind of doing the same thing, working with the account team on, okay, now let's take all the work that we just did and make sure mm-hmm. that we've got our strategies aligned and that we actually start to realize that value as soon as possible. So instead of realizing value 6, 9, 12 months after the transition, we actually start realizing value as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I have a great deal of conviction about as an account lead. I feel like often account directors and account teams feel like they're the internal client of the transition team. I'm not your client. I'm your partner. I have as much accountability, and I probably, as an account director, have the ultimate accountability to whether or not that transition is successful or not. So sitting back and waiting for a status update isn't that practical, right? And it doesn't really help the account team to be effective in a really meaningful way once we go live. And I think that that partnership and driving that partnership from my level down through the account team, that you are partners with the transition team. The transition team is here to work with us, not for us. We all work for our client, but we don't work for each other. We work with each other. There's a big, it's an important shift in mindset, and you get a different set of outcomes. And I think you mentioned this, the really important outcome for me as an account director is that when we approach a transition that way, we go live, there is this perception, and always has been, that there is a dip, right? So there's going to be a dip in performance. We're going to go live. The transition team is going to hand this off to the account team. The account team is then going to have to figure out how to operate that piece of machinery. Well, we're being integrated right on down the line from, you know, T-minus 90 to day zero when we go live. I know how that machine runs. My service line leads know how the machine runs. They know the processes, they know the data, they know the team that's being put into place. When they get started, what are they starting? They're starting business as usual. They're not starting transition 2.0, which we've both seen happen. I mean, and that's meaningful to our clients, because if we start transition 2.0 on day one, when are we starting business as usual? And when are we getting to that outcome and that value, unlocking that value for our clients in their portfolio and in their operations? Well, we're getting to it 9 months down the line. And that's not how it should be.
No, and that dip that you talked about from a service perspective, that's a part of a very traditional change curve, right? How does change occur and how do we manage through it? And so you'll hear people talk about there being a dip. I think the best way to alleviate that is all of this upfront work that we want to do. It's having those conversations early, even before you actually award the work. Right? Get in and have the hard conversations around what the problems are you're trying to solve. Be transparent and open about it so that we can start to plan. And so many companies, when they think about transition, what they do is lift and shift what the client already has. And of course, I think a lot of our clients also come to the table expecting to see, oh, I'm going to work exactly the same way with you that I've worked with everybody else, whether it's internal or external. And I think if clients will come with an open mind, we're going to try to tackle all of that change up front. So we're going to talk about, okay, what's your current state? We're going to map out your current process. Then we're going to talk about, okay, well, here's your new process. We're going to align on new roles and responsibilities. And then we're going to go retrain the team so that they start to adopt what they need to know, and that change in mindset. Because let's face it, a lot of times we're bringing over people in that transition and they've worked with the same client for many years and they don't always embrace change themselves. And so we have very good programs that allow us to onboard those employees in a way that helps them start to change their mindset, adopt a new, I'll call it culture, but new ways of working and really understand the change. I was talking to one of my coworkers, I guess her peers, and she was describing an example where they literally laid out a bridge outside the door. And as employees came to work, keep in mind, they'd been with this company for 10 years. They actually had to walk over the bridge, and they talked about how it signified the change and the entry into this new way of working. And I thought it was just great.
Very ceremonial, but probably very effective and powerful for people. Lift and shift is probably something we should all try to banish from our vocabularies or our vernacular, if you will, because you don't, if you do the same thing, you get the same result. And what all of our clients are looking for is a different result.
Sarah, I agree, but you would be amazed at how many clients want to keep on doing the same thing they've always done. They're afraid of the disruption. And so I think it's important to talk about, okay, who the stakeholders are, what's the impact going to be? Let's actually create a risk mitigation plan that's going to address that. And then let's talk about where it makes sense to make change now during the transition versus trying to do it 2 years down the road. I think if we tackle it now, make the change within the first I don't know, 3 to 6 months, then you actually can realize the value that you were trying to achieve much sooner.
And I think it's interesting that my experience, I don't know if this has been your experience, but the flavor of the outsourcing can really impact. And it's not so much that one is better than another, but it's just a little bit different experience when you start talking about, is this a first generation outsourcing? Has the client never outsourced their services before? Is this a second generation outsourcing? If you're down to like the fourth or the fifth generation of the outsourcing, which some occupiers who were very early to the game here with this have been through multiple, you know, iterations of the outsourcing model, and it's a little bit of a different proposition with each. And I think maybe there's a perception that if they've outsourced before, it's easier, but then they're bringing along the baggage, whatever it is. So the approach is a little bit different and the challenges are a little bit different, no?
Oh, I agree. You know, I talked a little bit about the team. I didn't talk about their expertise. We've got, you know, P&P project managers, and we've got our change management certified team. But more importantly, what we look for is agility. Mm-hmm. And the ability to flex and to create those flexible solutions. And onboarding a first generation client is so different than someone who's done outsourcing before. I have a client that we worked with, several years back, but they were new. They were up and coming. They were a little bit of a startup company, and they were so excited to be working with their new partner. And yet, I think the way that if you went through a typical transition, they didn't understand. They didn't even understand the terminology. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to do a timeout, stand down, go back and start talking about, okay, what did you just buy? What does that look like? What does that mean to you?
Yeah.
How does that change your role? And oh, by the way, let us explain all these acronyms, right? What's IFM? Let's talk about integrated facility management, what that looks like and what it means to you and how you've been doing business and how that's going to shift over. And they were really appreciative.
So we talked a little bit about what makes the transition go particularly smoothly: transparency, partnership, you know, clarity of purpose and alignment around goals. But transition is hard work. It's a heavy lift. It doesn't always go smoothly. What makes transition more difficult?
When I think about the worst transitions I've ever been through, they're the ones where we get no data.
Yeah.
We get no contact information. We have no idea who we're actually going to even talk to try to start to transition over the business. And then at the same time, the client says, wait, but you said you could do this.
Yeah.
And so I think where we see, I see the most difficult transitions is when the client's not engaged. They also want something that's not reasonable. And I hate to say that, but it's difficult to get there. And so you have to start to form that partnership or have discussions around how do we get through this, you know?
The partnership is so important because I think that many outsourcings suffer from bad data, right? So many transitions suffer from bad data. And I think often it's like the dirty little secret. And rather than saying, our data's just not great, and so we need to approach due diligence in a certain way that allows us to remedy the bad data issue by collecting new data, which is something that is a very reasonable approach to take. It's more like clients are a little ashamed that their data is poor. And so they say things like, well, you're the experts. You should know how many chillers we have because we have this many square feet. We've told you the square footage and we do this kind of business. And this is the environment, like climate wise of this location. You should know how many chillers we have.
But Sarah, that's the point. If we knew, or if they knew, then they wouldn't need us, right? And so I think where we come in is, okay, be candid about that. Let's talk about it.
Right.
And then we're going to put together a plan to actually go collect all of your data. And then we're going to build out your preventative maintenance program or your asset management strategy in a way that allows us to effectively achieve your goals.
And that's so important because, listen, those are really sort of bread and butter base level things. You need to know from a facilities management standpoint, obviously, what is the condition of your asset? What are the mechanicals? What do they look like? What kind of equipment do we have? What kind of building systems do we have? Where are they in the life cycle of that specific piece of equipment? But this isn't just about, you know, the bricks and the sticks. This is about the broader portfolio for clients. And ultimately, clients want to get the most value out of their portfolio. If you've got a decaying asset and you've got a lot of people sitting in it and you're having a hard time attracting talent, well, that's problematic. And no doubt part of your portfolio strategy is tied to your labor strategy, which is tied to retaining talent and attracting talent. Where do you marry those things up? How do we look at your facility, and then we look at your portfolio strategy, and then we look at where your business strategy is going and marry all those things up? I mean, that's where clients really want to be. So let's start out being open with each other about the data, and let's make life easier on everybody down the line. That's my mantra. Make life easier on your future self. And that applies not just to myself and to the team on the Cushman side, but also to our clients. We're here to help you. Well, Brandy, this has been a lot of fun. I always love to sit down and talk with you, and particularly about transition, which you and I are both pretty passionate about. I think my big takeaway here is that this doesn't have to be a scary process. It's a purposeful process. We're the experts at this. We do this all the time, and we spend a lot of time thinking about it. So we're here to help. Let's, you know, all get down that path together.
Well said.
Well, that's it. Thank you again for joining your team around the table. Thank you, Brandy.
Thank you, Sarah.